It's the Tiltcast, episode 623. I'm an artiste.
And this week, guys, we talk about The Division 2, Death Stranding 2, On the Beach, and Stellar Blade. Stay tuned.
Jason took a break. And we're back.
I've got a can too. There we go.
It is the Tiltcast.
Woo!
Yeah, I'm Nos.
I'm Rusty.
There's no Jason. It's an M-rated show. No Jason. And with the two of us, you're going to get some amount of time's worth of bullshit.
Ooh, okay.
Some games and some news.
Mm-hmm.
Did I manage? Yeah, it's been an interesting week. I've managed to get some game in, which I will talk about. And I have cleaned out. So with my grandma passing away, I've been cleaning out her house with the rest of my family off and on, like every other day or sometimes a couple days in a row. And it has fucked up my sinuses. Pretty sure I had a sinus infection last night. Or a cold or flu. I don't know. I had a fever. I almost threw up on Friday. Trying to pour my energy drink all over myself. But I haven't had any photo jobs, so I've been not busy with that. But I've gotten into games, so I will have game to talk about, which is good.
Yeah.
And got a 9800 X3D for the main rig.
Yeah.
And the, what is it? I got a 5800 X3D or is it a 5950X? I can't remember. But what's in there right now is going in this podcast rig. The combo deal I got came with a 1 terabyte NVMe, which is going to go in this machine.
Okay.
And I've got a about a 4 terabyte NVMe to put in the main machine. So another one of my NVMEs from there will also go in here for additional storage, and I will move all that crap over. I've got one NVMe that is not Windows 11 compatible, so I'm going to have to toss that. Which also happens to be my C drive and my Windows drive for the other machine. So I've got to clone Windows on that one over to another drive, move all that shit over, and then upgrade to Windows 11 on the other machine after I get everything installed.
So I have some software that you might like to use for that. You might want to write this one down. The software that you'd want to use for that, that's free, I believe, is Macrium Reflect.
Macrium Reflect?
It's M-A-C-R-I-U-M. Macrium Reflect. It's I use that a lot to clone a... It's a software cloning, so you can actually do images of a drive too, but you can clone from one drive to another. It works both in, I don't know if you can actually do the Windows PE environment, which is basically a bootable drive. I use a bootable drive with Macrium Reflect on it, and that will allow me to basically clone a drive before it loads any type of OS, because it's loading the OS from the stick. And that is the most, it's the most accurate clone. So that is one, one option for you. The other is like a hardware cloner, and that's way too expensive. So,
I want to move all of my stuff over quickly. I say quickly, it's not going to be quick, but somewhat quickly over to another drive so that I can just easily uninstall that drive.
Yeah, so, Macrium Reflect would do, do that. Or, if you're trying to do, like, just file backup and you're not necessarily wanting to keep the OS, you could just, you know, you could just move over what files that you want, you know, easily. I don't know how much space you are using right now. That's the key.
About,
if you're looking to upgrade your OS, like you said, it was OS Windows 10, right? So
I'm a late bloomer with my Windows 10.
Gotcha. Okay, so what I would do, a brand new install is always best because you end up, you know, you don't end up with a bunch of junk, right? But what you can do is clone your current drive over to the 4 terabyte drive, go into Windows and expand the volume because you're going from what, a 2 terabyte to a 4 terabyte, right? So
now I'm actually going from, let's see, 1 1 terabyte, one another 1 terabyte, and then an SSD.
Okay. What I got. Also, you're going from a 1 terabyte drive, your C drive, to a 4 terabyte C drive. So you're going to need to expand your volume anyway. Once you've done that, then you can go through the like the Windows 11 upgrade process and just do it that way. It's okay.
Yeah, I was thinking about moving the Windows installation over to the other drive and then pulling that other drive, knowing there's like a legit issue with a very specific brand of NVMe that I have that is not compatible with Windows 11. So I need to get the Windows drive moved to another drive before I even upgrade.
Right. So, when you clone from the 1 terabyte to the 4 terabyte, expanded on the 4 terabyte, you're then running off of the 4 terabyte drive at that point, and then you can upgrade to Windows 11.
Yeah, and I'm just going to pull that drive, you know, delete everything on it, and then just toss it.
Yeah, well, that's unfortunately what you do with aging tech these days is toss it.
It's a first or second gen NVMe. Since I've had it, it's been reliable. It works great. When I was looking at upgrading, it's one of the reasons I haven't upgraded is the fact that that particular drive is incompatible. I think I posted the story, like PC Gamer had said, oh, there's a handful of drives that just don't work. And it happened to name the one drive that I had. And I was like, what the fuck?
Well, you know, NVMe's are pretty solid. Of course, being solid state, that's kind of a tongue in cheek, but still it's, I've only ever had a handful of NVMe drives take a shit on me, you know, and those were always like some off-brand, you know, NVMe drives. Never anything. I think I've only ever had one Samsung drive go bad on me, and I think that was due to it had ESD damage. It got a shock.
What I've got now is a Western Digital Blacks and a Samsung are the only drives I'm going to have in here now.
Right. So yeah, they're going to be, you know, it's going to stay solid for you. Yeah, that shouldn't be a problem at all.
And I also am upgrading to 64 gigs of DDR5. I know that's overkill.
Way overkill, but whatever.
But hear me out. It does help with the amount of, when I'm running Lightroom and I'm running a full group of pictures. Let's just say I load a catalog of 2,000 pictures.
Oh yeah, that'll help for that.
It'll help with that kind of stuff and give me a lot of headroom to web browse and do things like that while I'm doing that. Because each one of those images is like 80 gigs or 80.
Oh yeah,
or 80 megs. So like it's. For every single, like when I, to put it in perspective, like I'll come back from a long show. I did a festival 2 weeks ago and I had 560 gigs worth of photos. So that's a lot of space. And
yeah,
I know there's some, that's the reason I'm running everything in NVMe because of the transfer, right? And I move stuff from the camera to the hard drive and then obviously. When I'm done, I move that stuff to a backup. I tend to move in groups to a backup. The other reason I was moving to Windows 11 is the limitations on space. So I have a backup hard drive that's 20 terabytes. But Windows 10 doesn't recognize that it's 20 terabytes. It recognizes about 15.
Yeah.
So it's beyond what Windows 10 is built for. So it's it's not that it doesn't work. It's just it's silly. They only got about 2 terabytes worth of stuff on there backed up. But the goal is to get rid of all the spinny drives. I got one spinny drive that's an archive that's got about 700 and some odd gigs worth of shit on it. But because that Western Digital drive is like 14 years old, that thing is, it moves at like 20 megs a second. It takes forever to download anything off of it. But I'm going to get everything off that, erase it, remove it, be done with all the spinny drives in this machine. That new board's got, I think, 3 different spots for NVMEs on that board. 3 or 4. No, it's got 4.
Yeah.
4 mounting brackets for NVMEs. And then I've got a mounting board for a PCIe thing that will mount 4 NVMEs to it. You might wonder, like, well, Nas, why do you have so many fucking hard drives? Video games take up a lot of space, and photos just take a shitload of space. That's what this all boils down to, and this is why I'm such a nerd about fucking hard drive space. Out of the group, I probably easily take the cake on the amount of hard drive space I'm currently using at any one time.
Well, yeah, that's, you know, the photos alone. I mean, I know what photos and art actually take up, and, you know, as far as space is concerned, from the daily, but yeah, it takes a lot. One of these days, I'm going to talk you into getting a NAS or even a direct attached storage, something outside of your computer that you can archive to.
Yeah, well, I mean, the big backup drive stays disconnected unless I'm downloading stuff to it. So I'll leave it powered on, but it only is attached to anything, you know, with a computer when I'm moving stuff to it. And I guess the idea there is if I have some kind of power surge, it doesn't fuck everything up.
That's called air gap storage. That's fine, but what you're going to want, and I think I've talked to you about this before, but you want redundant backup just in case something happens. That hard drive decides to take a shit on you. You know, you're not going to lose your entire hard drive or entire archive. If you have, say, if you had like a 4-disk NAS, right? And you put 20 terabyte drives in that NAS, you could have a redundant storage of, you know, redundancy on your storage. So if one of your drives failed, all you have to do is swap the drive and it would rebuild off of the other drives. And you'd also have twice the storage space. A lot of those network attached storage, NASs, they have their own, they have their own file system, so it's not reliant on the Windows file system for like volume size. You can change the volume sizes, you know, to meet your needs. So, for instance, if you wanted to have 2 separate volumes of like 10 terabytes each, right? You'd be able to set up a volume for each one of those. You'd have like a working archive, and you would have like a deep storage, like past projects, you know, cold archive that you could use. And
it
gives you a little bit more, you know, control over your archive.
Yeah, I think I looked at it as a money plus time project. And I've got a lot of those right now. I think the biggest major improvement to our working life and this podcast was finding a reason to upgrade this machine that we're currently recording on.
Because it's like fucking, what, 10 years old now?
Yeah, and you built this on the cheap 10 years ago, and you did a good job, right?
Yeah.
I bought I don't even remember what I bought. A Radeon card for it for a display driver, or display. And then I'll move my existing chipset that I've been gaming on with 32 gigs of RAM into this. So it'll have a lot of the same stuff I had in my other machine in this machine.
Right.
Just a shitty graphics card.
Whatever. The shitty graphics card was really only just to be able to like do 1080p and, you know, be able to like maybe see some YouTube videos without like having problems, right? It's very interesting watching the, you know, watching the camera feed for the podcast, because all I see is Lola the Wonder Pup running around the table very slowly.
Yeah, I'm trying to chase her down to get her back in her cave there.
Yeah, there you go.
But yeah, but,
like, yeah, the I think when I built that, it was the same year you got the house. It was,
so that's 11 years ago.
Yeah, so it's been a long ass time, and we were limping that fucker along when, you know, just before I was, you know, ready to move north, like 3 years ago, right?
Yeah,
almost 4 years ago now.
There's things in here that will be fine, like that soundboard we have is going strong, but the shit, I don't even know. I'm gonna have to dig out a cooler. I don't even remember if we have a cooler in here.
There is. There's. I think it might be a stock cooler. Honestly,
that's all it needs. So,
the problem is that cooler probably won't work with the, you know, the chip that you got. So,
might have to
order one, or might maybe able to, you know, to just grab one. You could probably grab one from, you know, someplace local though.
Yeah, I don't need anything fancy.
I
need a cooler.
If I remember my Tulsa topology here for places, I think like what there was a PC place not too far away from you that just did like, you know, cheap builds and had spare parts and shit, right?
Yeah, but it's I don't even know what they're, that computer store is trash.
I know it's trash, but I mean, if you only need a, you know, a basic ass fucking, you know, cooler, they probably got a shitload of those coolers sitting around for like $10.
Well, there's probably a base cooler that came with the CPU that I bought, isn't there?
Not the 9800X3D. The 9800X3D is just the chip.
Yeah.
So.
Here's my box. Still sitting on here.
You still got the box. Yeah, it's a big ass box. That's but it's just the chip.
No, this is for the 5900X is what I have. That's what's going to go in here.
Yeah, 5900X is perfectly fine for what we're doing here.
Perfectly fine. It's paired in my current build.
Perfectly fine. It's way better than what we've got in this rig right now. That's for sure.
Yeah, I don't even know what it is.
I am 99% sure that the 9800X3D does not come with a stock cooler. Because that's one of the cost saving measures that they did with, you know, with performance chips, is they're like, yeah, no, fuck it. We're not going to throw a chunk of aluminum in there either. So, but, you know, you can get a, you know, a cheap ass stock cooler, probably fairly simply, especially in Tulsa. It'd be a little bit harder for me up north because there isn't any, you know, dedicated computer places up here, unless you consider Best Buy a dedicated computer place, which is not the case. Now, worst case scenario, you order something from Amazon, you wait another couple of days, you know? Or, I mean, you do have a distribution hub not too far away from there, so you probably get it next day. Like, I don't know.
I'm curious.
We got a distribution hub up north here, and I'll tell you what.
You know what you put in here? It's a Ryzen 3 2200G.
2200G. I remember the G because it had integrated graphics.
It's got 16 gigs of RAM. Is this DDR3 probably?
Ooh, that's an old chip, man. Holy crap. Hey, it was economical at the time, and it was not by any means the top of the line at the time that I built this thing. It was like I needed to build a computer for like $450. And I did. It worked okay. I wouldn't say well, but it worked okay. And it's done its fair share of work.
It's done thousands of hours of podcasts. So
that's true. And I'm not going to dog shit it because it needs to live until you can build a replacement. But
yeah.
But yeah, it's going to be night and day difference. You know, it takes this machine 5 to 10 minutes to warm up to the point where we can actually record.
And
your machine will be good in 30 seconds.
I'm looking up computer store here.
I am fairly certain.
Yeah, you're thinking of Wholesale Computer Supply.
Yes, I am here thinking of Wholesale
Computer Supply. They are trash.
Sorry. They are trash, but they have I guarantee you they have stock coolers available, you know, for the cheap.
Yeah, we'll see. Right. I'd spend $30 at Best Buy to get a better cooler, to be honest with you. But right, I'm gonna dig around and see if I can't find my old AMD cooler. I remember giving Jason some cooler options.
I know you were looking behind you because there was a cooler like up in that rack that you have, that little cubby at some point. And I don't remember what it was for, but I remember it being there. It was a big chunk of aluminum. These are the things I remember about a house that I haven't been in a couple of years. So you might have given that to Jason. I don't know. That might have been.
I'm pretty sure I did give it to Jason.
Okay. Well, I don't know if you had the right mounting brackets for it anyway. So if it's probably worth just going, dropping $30 at Best Buy and seeing what you can get for that. You know, coolers are actually relatively inexpensive these days, so.
Yeah, when you're not buying a Noctua, they're not bad.
Right. You know, but, you know, I build everything with either an AIO these days or a Noctua, just because I've got expensive paste.
Well, I've been waiting on thermal paste, so that's the last part of the build. I just found thermal paste.
You found thermal paste. See, I knew you had some. I have gallons of that shit sitting around here somewhere. I buy it like by the boatload. I use it on the daily. So I mean, I need to have my electro lube. Oh, there it is. You have the under bracket, though. That's the other part. So,
I need to have the screws for it.
Well.
Oh, it'll have mounting. It should have mounting screws on the board.
No. See, most of those, most of the mounting brackets, there's going to be the top portion, which you've got in your hand, and you've got two, you know, like an X or something. That goes on the back side of the board. That is, you know, that's your standoffs for, you know, screwing into, you know, into the top part so that you can get good pressure on your processor. If you don't have those, then basically what you've got is a chunk of aluminum. So, I mean, you could probably like rig something together if you really wanted to, but it's probably not worth it. Not for 30, you know, you can go get something for $30. Be fine.
Yeah, I've got shit in this closet. I don't even know what it is.
I don't think, when was the last time you actually, like, went through that, that podcast room closet, man? You're going to find some shit in there that's like, oh, I, I, uh, I stuffed this in here like 8 years ago and completely forgot about it.
That's how this room goes. Not, it's been in use for other reasons.
Yeah, yeah. We'll just leave it at that.
Hell, I got a whole case in there that I can't use and I couldn't return because I was trying to build a... I can't even remember why. I've got so much shit in here, I just need to toss. But, what have you been up to? Did you do anything interesting this week?
I guess I had some interesting things. So, the entirety of the last podcast, I was actually working. Which, I mean, podcasting and getting paid for it is the dream, right? But
not that way.
Not exactly in that way. Well, it turned out that I had worked enough that before, you know, I was at 40 hours about halfway through Thursday. So I got a lot of overtime this week. But I also feel like I haven't really had a day off in 2 weeks, which, yeah, kind of sucks. I mean, sure, you know, working from home is, you know, some people's form of a dream, I suppose. But when you're basically tied to a computer and you can't leave, it starts to feel like work. And, you know, the shit that I was doing was, you know, pretty stressful. So I got through it. But yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to, you know, working a bunch of overtime because I'm going to need the money. And, you know, I was like, I'm going to build a house, you know? Well, reality set in.
Yeah.
So the process of like getting the house and doing the, you know, getting the initial quote for how much it was going to cost, that was, you know, I got the quote and it was doable. It came with a number that was like, hey, this is possible. I could live on, you know, I could live, you know, it'd be tight, but I could live and I could have my own space and I could, you know, I could actually furnish the place over a period of time and may not be like, you know, I may not be, you know, wearing freaking designer clothes or anything like that, or, you know, or eating filet mignon, but man, I'd be able to live. But reality set in. And guess what? There's two things in life you cannot escape. One is death. The other is taxes. And taxes, I'll tell you right now, was not in the initial calculation and the initial quote, even though they kind of snuck in a tax number and numbers around. The taxes was not part of the initial quote. I learned a lot about property taxes in the last 6 days. I'll tell you, the government takes their pound and a half of flesh and then asks for three more. The short story about taxes. You remember when housing prices was actually reasonable? You know, this mythical time 6 years ago.
Yeah, before, wasn't that long ago.
Yeah, it was like, hey, you know, you wanted to build, you know, to buy or build a house. It doesn't require like three times the amount that you make in a month. So COVID happened, prices doubled or more on housing, you know, on the housing market. Everything went up and is staying up and it's not showing any signs of going away. That is the known part. The unknown part, and you won't necessarily see this until you actually get into the point where I was at looking at building or buying a house, is the property taxes have also gone up in proportion to the amount that you pay for your house. See, there's a calculation that is about 50% of the total value of your home and land, times the millage rate, for where you're at, and that is your property tax. What is not known and what trips up a lot of people, including me, is that you can't really look at your neighbor's property taxes, especially if they had built or bought their home prior to COVID. Because the, you know, at least in Michigan, and I don't know if it's, you know, if it's the same way everywhere, but in, at least in the state of Michigan, the property taxes only rise 2% of your total value of your home every year. Now, take this into account. In 2020, you know, let's say 2020 was the day that, you know, it's the year that it happened, where all of the housing prices basically doubled in, you know, in value, right? So if you had a $100,000 house and it's now $200,000, your taxable value for the 2020 taxes was still 100K. And then the next year, it's 102K and 104K and 106K, even though your value of your house is twice as much. So you're only paying taxes on basically half of the value of your house. And that is the case until you either sell the house or do significant build on your house to the point where it needs to be reassessed. Those things uncap the taxes to the current value of your home. And they're like, okay, that makes sense, but why is my taxes so high compared to my neighbors? Well, they're still paying basically grandfathered taxes that only increase 2% each year, whereas I, building a house, get the uncapped rate right from the get-go. So I am paying twice as many, you know, twice as much in taxes as my neighbors, and probably will for the next 50 years. And that is nuts.
It really is.
So anybody that's trying to build, you know, so, and I'm like, this unlocked the knowledge that was missing for me. Like, my initial question was, why isn't anybody building any houses? Well, you know, if, you know, up here, up in the north, there's a housing crisis that's not necessarily the same as everywhere else. There isn't enough houses up here. There isn't enough apartments up here to house everybody. So housing prices in the state of Michigan, especially in northern Michigan, is extremely different than, say, Tulsa, which has a housing market that has enough houses for churn to happen. There isn't enough houses up here. So I was wondering why people weren't building houses to, you know, basically help with this churn. This is the reason. This little, you know, this unknown bit that's not on most of the quotes that you get. This is the reason. This tax number is the cause of not seeing new builds happen. And it's also the reason why whenever an apartment goes in, get this shit, an apartment is going in a rural community just north of where I'm at, about 20 miles away from the city of Traverse City, Michigan. It's basically a corner in the middle of nowhere on a major highway between where I'm at and Traverse City. And they are putting in an apartment complex. That apartment complex, the rooms and, you know, the apartments in that apartment complex start at $1,750.
That's ridiculous.
I looked at my apartment in Tulsa in the Tulsa area when I was there. I was paying $850 for my apartment in that apartment that I was at. And I looked just because I needed to make sure that I was not crazy. I looked to see what they were advertising the apartments, you know, how much their apartments were, you know, and they had raised the rates. Predictably, I assumed that it was going to go up. It is now $950. I would probably kill for a $950 apartment right now because that's not available up here. You have to have a significant other or roommate or two to actually have a roof over your head in the state of Michigan. And this is the reason why I'm not building this house. Because I had already sacrificed the walkout basement, the garage, the, you know, any additional anything on the property outside of the house and the steps to go into the house, right? Nothing additional. I was going to get a bare ass, like, gravel driveway, not anything special, just like fucking pave the dirt over, throw some rocks on it, and fucking, like, you know, that was it. That was my driveway. You know, the kind of driveway where you run a freaking, you know, lawnmower over it and you could shoot a rock through your car kind of driveway. I gave up because I had to, you know, I had to remove so much of what I wanted from a house to make it as bare bones as possible. And even at the bare bones minimum, it's not possible. Not unless I have two incomes coming in. And the whole point of me building the house was to basically not have a roommate. You know, have some of that freedom. I want to have my own space, right? It's the same reason why you wanted to get your place. You know, you wanted to have your own space. My advice to you, my guy, keep that fucker.
Yeah.
Don't move. Anyway, if you're thinking about moving, don't. If you're thinking about improving it, improve the inside and repair the outside. Don't make them think that the house has any more value than it currently has. You know, and stay. Don't leave. You know, unless you're in a, you know, in a situation where you're, if you're in a situation where you just hate your neighbors or it's a dangerous neighborhood, don't fuck. Leave. Holy fuck. It's rough out there. And that is the major, like, the major things that I've learned. This week has been a lot of working, a lot of overworking, and a lot of dealing with a lot of disappointment in numbers that I, and in learning about tax codes in the state of Michigan that I didn't think I was going to have to deal with. I mean, I didn't think that it was going to be that rough on me. So I'm staying where I'm at. I'm going to have, you know, I mean,
something else has got to give.
I'm thinking at some point that something will give, or I will change my focus. So my boss thinks that I could live in an RV, and I'm telling him wrong. I'm like, no, that's not going to be a possibility. Now, possibly getting an RV and spending the, you know, summers in the RV, or like a tiny house, I could spend summers in that house and then winter in my buddy's place. I can understand that. That at least gives me half of the year where I've got my own space, right? And I feel like that might be a compromise that I can do. But it's not ideal. It's not truly my own space, right? You know, I'll have that. I'm looking at, you know, a lot of different options, right? And I'm not going to commit to anything. And I'm basically, the only thing that I've committed to is not buying anything for over a year. So, I have basically made the decision. I'm not going anywhere. I'm not buying anything big for an entire year. I'm going to bank a bunch of money that, you know, I want to set a bunch of money aside for, you know, for that. I'm going to sell the property that I've got. And I'm going to bank that to probably put it into a safe investment account that, you know, that gains some money, over a period of time. And then I can pull it out when I need to make a decision to do something like this. And honestly, I don't need a whole lot of space. In fact, the least amount of space I need a tiny a bit of space to live. And I'd be happy with that. I don't think I would have any problems living in a small space, provided that that space is set up in such a way that I can still have the comforts that I'm used to. Like, I want to still be able to PC game. I want to still be able to, you know, to use, you know, to have access to a relatively big monitor. I want to be able to relax. You know, I want to have heating and cooling. You know, I want to have a, you know, a normal sized bed and a, you know, and a normal sized shower. But I don't need to spend a lot of space on the bed. I don't need to spend a lot of space on the shower. I just want to have a normal size shower, right?
Right.
My living space can all be one area. I mean, and I'm sitting here thinking that's what tiny homes basically are. Is it just is a compact way of living, you know? And as long as I have the amenities that I need, then it's doable for me. Because I don't have a lot of shit. I really don't like having a lot of shit. So it'd give me incentive to pare down even more, which I'm okay with, because the less I have, the less I have to clean up, right? But the challenge to a tiny home is that the winters up here suck. They suck hard.
Yeah.
When you've got like a foot of snow coming down every day. Yeah, it gets a little old. So I've got some challenges ahead, but again, I'm not moving anytime soon. So you know, I'll still be here. I still have my space, I still have a roof over my head, my current roommates aren't gonna kick me out. I'm good to go. So, yeah, that's basically it. That was all the fun that I had. What's
right.
So yeah.
Go ahead.
I had a little bit of game, but not as much as you, I don't think. Honestly, just with all that shit. Just didn't have a whole lot of time. I'd come home and I'd be fucking exhausted. So,
well, did you get into anything?
Really, the only thing that I got into was a little bit more of The Division 2, and I don't know why. And I hate Ubisoft, and we all know this. And I have problems with The Division 2 being an Ubisoft game, and it really kind of sucks. But honestly, being an Ubisoft game, it doesn't really feel like the same kind of Ubisoft game. Like,
well, it's because it was before they completely homogenized all their game design.
Well, that's one of the, well, the other thing is that if it's a Tom Clancy game, like for instance, you know, Rainbow Six Siege, or any of the Rainbow Six games, and The Division 2, they all feel different because it's a Tom Clancy game, right? Or based off of a Tom Clancy, you know, Tom Clancy franchise. They feel different because they don't follow the same homogenized, it's Ubisoft, you go collect feathers type thing, right? It does have some collection in it, and I get that. That's part of the thing. But but it's not nearly as bad. Like it feels more directed, and you're doing it for a very specific thing. It's for you being able to explore the map, and you did a really good job on the map. I'm gonna be honest with you. It feels varied depending. You know, it's a full fucking city, right? So it is. Well, it is a good portion of DC, which is where the Division II is initially set. And it all feels, you know, like all of the areas are like, there isn't any cookie cutters, right? It's just each of the buildings feels different. I've always liked the way, you know, the way that they set, you know, set the game up, because it looks like a post-apocalyptic freaking, you know, DC situation, right? Cars strewn everywhere, trash in the fucking streets, and, you know, roving gangs, like, killing other people, and people just trying to survive. I don't know. The game, I played the game when it first came out, like 6-7 years ago, whatever, right? And I liked it when it, you know, first came out. I liked the original.
I think it was 8 years ago.
It was 8 years ago? Holy shit. God, time flies.
Maybe 9.
When I liked the original Vision when that came, you know, that came out. Vision 2 came out. I played it, and it was one of those, I got to max level, did a little bit of, you know, little bit of the thing, and that was it. I was done. I moved on to something else. It was probably during my Warframe days.
Okay. It wasn't as bad as I said. Division 2 is 2019. Original Division was 2016.
Okay. So, yeah, 2019, that was...
That tracks.
Yeah. So, that was 6 years ago. So, yeah. That, you know, that is... You know, that's the game that's, you know, that I'm kind of slowly chewing through right now. I can pick that up and put it down. I could do a couple missions, set it aside, and move on with my day. Or more often than not, I sit down, do a couple missions. My eyes are super fucking heavy by the time I'm done with that last mission. I find a spot, I log out, I go to bed, and I have, you know, I have no obligations. Right. That's what I was looking for in a game. You know, it's filling that need. I needed a looter shooter. It's a decent looter shooter. It's doing its job. I have a few other games, like, well, actually the summer sale's open right now. So
yeah, there's
a lot of games available.
Yeah. Is Tainted Grail on sale?
Painted Grail, the
Fallout Avalon. That's
on my wish list, so I'm checking. Painted Grail, Fall of Avalon, it's 20% off right now.
So that put it like
$35? $35.99, in fact. Yep.
Damn. I'm an artiste.
Yes. So that's, you know, I've got a bunch of shit on my wish list that's all... that's how I know when the summer sale happens, because I'll get an email saying 17 or 8, you know, like 17 plus of your games on your wish list are on sale, and I'm like, oh, it must be a sale period.
I don't know that I'm buying anything right now.
I mean, so there's a few games on here that I was initially. Yeah, you know, like I put things on my wish list that like catch my eye, and I, you know, just so that I can like keep track of them.
Let's say another one that would be worth it is Abiotic Factor.
Abiotic Factor is on my wish list as well.
Last Faith is good. Any of the Blasphemous games are good.
Yes. There's quite a few.
Pacific Drive.
I'm looking through. The Banishers Ghosts of New Eden is a game that I planned on picking up, but didn't necessarily.
I keep forgetting about that game.
It's $19.99 right now. 60% off.
That might be. I've got so much on my plate right now.
Yeah, and
that's basically my problem.
What I end up doing with, you know, with these games or these game sales is I pick up a bunch of games, just like you've done over the, you know, over the, you know, the period of time, and you get to them eventually, right?
Yeah, the problem is, then that's why I need another big hard drive, because I keep them installed until I finish them. The Quasimorph would be another one you might pick up. Or Quasimorph. Or Mandragora. Quasimorph's great, but fuck is it hard. It's really interesting, though. It's a loosely turn-based shooter. It's brutal.
Once you get Quasimorph, let me look here.
Yeah, I'm not the only one that likes that. I've liked it, and then I was feel like I was I don't know what the word is. I'm a little bit sick, guys. But I feel justified in that, like, as in that Splattercat has covered that game like 4 times.
Yeah. Looks interesting. I put it on the wish list. Just,
you know, if it's like $10
and 25% off right now.
Yeah. Mandragora is good too. That has a bullshit last boss, but up until that last boss, like, it took me like 3 hours to beat the last boss. Maybe for you, since you're better, like, just it goes from not being much of a bullet hell to being a bullet hell at the very end. It's a good game though.
Yeah, that one has a lot of animation style is pretty smooth.
It's super smooth. It's a gorgeous looking game. But speaking of stuff that might be on sale that you might check out, I don't know if it is or not, tried my hand at Stellar Blade.
It's not on sale, but you did actually play a little bit of the Astro Jiggler Simulator.
Yeah, I think this game got really mischaracterized.
That's what a lot of people say.
I think if you liked Bayonetta, you'd probably like this. And Bayonetta is also, it's got serious Bayonetta vibes.
I also get a lot of like Nier Automata, you know.
It's a love letter to Nier. It's very much a love letter to Nier. Story's more than serviceable. It's pretty easy to follow. Acting surprisingly good. Yes, there is some jiggle. Yes, every girl looks hot. Let's see. Let's get past the stuff that people unfairly criticize, I think. It's a game made for dudes. It's not like she has crotchless panties on. Let's just get that out of the way. There are a lot of outfits where you see some ass, but you see underwear. And honestly, I'm not paying it. The outfits are purely cosmetic. There are outfits you can unlock as you play the game. The first outfit you get is not incredibly revealing. It is not as much of a gooner game as Dead or Alive is. Dead or Alive, I think, is a total gooner game. The gameplay is really good. I've been playing this while I've been talking to my girlfriend. Like, I'm not paying that much attention to Eve. Eve's an android. She's designed to be the perfect human. So she's a perfectly proportioned gal. But the monster design is like on point. The monster design is particularly gruesome. The finishing moves are particularly good. The parry system's pretty good. The combos and the dodges are pretty cool. Like, it's got a really good combat system. The level design's pretty cool. Boss fights are more than fairly hard. One probably took me like 6 or 7 attempts to get through. I'm like, I don't know, like around 10 hours through that game. I've been playing it off and on. Did not expect to like it as much as I did. I take that back. So like when it came out on PC, the interesting thing is like this is PlayStation's best-selling game on PC ever. Sony's best-selling game on PC ever, essentially, right?
Wow.
Yeah. Over Helldivers. And so I was like, okay, I need to try to play this. So I went on Green Man, got the basic version of the game for like $44 or something, right? Because with a AAA product, I'll go and look and see if Green Man's got a deal before I buy it. They did. And, you know, I buy stuff there fairly regularly when there's not Steam sales. And Maybe we just get Green Man to be a sponsor. I buy 10 products through that website annually. Easy.
Right.
I have been a gold member now for 5 years, Green Man. So if you want to start sponsoring us, like, bro, I regularly am talking about, oh, yeah, I bought that on Green Man. It's not a keylogger site. We're not being paid for this advertisement. It is a very legit site that buys several copies of the game and then resells those games. And they get some kind of bulk discount on it. And they give a pretty – sometimes it's marginal. But if you buy a lot of stuff on there, you usually get at least 10% off, sometimes more. Sometimes a little bit less than that, but you always get a discount on stuff by buying stuff of them. And they usually have all of the main, you know, the bigger games and some of the smaller ones. Got Mandragora on there, got Stellar Blade recently on there, got Helldivers on there. But yeah, anyways, that aside. Yeah, the monster design's really cool. It's a third person action combat. Somewhat, it's an RPG-ish, like action RPG is what I would call it, right? Falls into the same, it's kind of like a Souls game in that, you know, you're yes and no. So the only thing really Souls-like about this is that when you rest, things respawn, and you can do that to grind. And so that's what makes it a Souls-like game. I think you probably only keep the main weapon. I don't know if you ever get a new weapon, but you're always upgrading it. So I'm always upgrading its power. I'm always upgrading new frames for my character so that I can have, like, better dodge or more defense or more attack or better combo power, etc. Every time you unlock a node in the skill system, it lets you try out whatever it is before you unlock it so you can go into the training and then figure out how the timings on things work and if that's going to be something that works for you. Every little, like, rest stop has a vending machine that lets you buy consumables. So that you can have extra health items. I haven't found myself needing them that much, except for boss fights where I'm not getting the timing down. You earn enough money in the regular battles and just around the world to save up enough extra consumables for that vending machine right before the boss fight. At least that's how it seems right now. You can top off all of your healing consumables and all of your offensive consumables. But you get a standard amount of consumables for health, kind of like, you know, your Estus Flak in the Souls games.
Okay.
So, but it's not like you can block, you can dodge, you can parry. And then you can do like a riposte and things like that too, or counterattacks, etc. It's all timing based. But yeah, the combat moves really fluidly. It's extremely well optimized for PC. Again, maybe I'm not the target market for testing optimizations. I'm brute forcing my way through everything. But yeah, if I capped it out at 120 FPS, because if I didn't, it would just get CPU dragged at 4K. Wow. It runs fantastically. Zero issue. And it's a good-looking game. Like, okay, let's get the Eve commentary aside. It's a good-looking game. Like, the monster design is super creepy, super cool-looking. Very much has the dark fantasy vibes I'm going for when I'm looking at these types of games. And again, the kill moves are really good. So, yeah. I don't know. If an android robot that looks remarkably human dressing in club outfits pisses you off, don't get this. If you don't have an issue with that, then get it. It's a game marketed towards dudes. It is, you know, or girls that are into girls, right? Like there's definitely some ass in here, but the gameplay like holds up to everything. Like, what was the name of the female character in Nier?
2B.
Yeah. 2B. Yeah. 2B was also remarkably scantily clad in a lot of instances as well.
Oh yeah.
And I nobody mean, gave a shit.
So yeah, I likened the, you know, so it initially was like, okay, this is a thing. As soon as you start playing Nier Automata, you lose that. I mean, initially you're like, oh, well, she's got a really short skirt, you know? And I think probably by the time you get through the initial, like the first mission, you lose that.
Yeah,
that is not your focus.
My focus is everything's going on around me. Like,
right.
I'm not paying as much attention to, oh, there was a very short ass shot when she did this backflip. Like, I'm not looking at that. I remember there was some like short videos going around on Reels and Instagram of her like going down ladders and the boob like shaking ever so, or the butt shaking ever so slightly. I think for whatever reason, game journos, I'm just going to call it what it was, like probably virtue signaling a little bit on this and didn't play enough of this game.
That's possible. So
it's a pretty good game. Like I think it's shitty that people are trying to make you feel bad for liking this game, but you don't feel bad for liking Nier, right? So like to me, they're apples and oranges. They're very similar. I don't think it's as good as some people really like Nier. Nier was like a 4 out of 5 for me, but for me, a lot of that issue was just the backdrop was really samey in spots, but it was a good game. Right. And I know a lot of people regard that as like a top 20 game of all time.
I'm going to fight you for that. Nier is in my top 20 for sure.
Then just try out Stellar Blade because it's a love letter to Nier. Like there's a lot of nods to Nier in this game.
The thing is, and I won't go too far into this, but so Nier, like if you go through the first playthrough of Nier, it's kind of B tier, right? In the second playthrough, you know, the second portion of the story, it gets better. By the time you finish the actual story, like when you go through it, the amount of times that is required, because there is no indicator that there is, you know, more to the story. But you have to basically play the game and then play the new game plus version of that game and continue on. You get different views of the story, and it reveals more and more about the world of Nier Automata. And the way that they did that and the way that they sucked me into the characters, not necessarily like, you know, like
it was literally a world design issue for me.
The world design itself is, you know, I agreed with you. All of the buildings seemed very boxy, like they're all cookie cutter, right? But then that was basically another thing that I set aside because the story and the implications of what Nier Automata was, the story that they were telling, made me want to continue all the way through to the end. And I'll tell you right now, it's also in my top 20 OSTs. The soundtrack for Nier Automata is something that I can actually just put on and listen to, and it has, you know, of every time I listen to it, I can get chills from that, you know, from that music. It's weird because, you know, almost none of it is English, but because I have the music actually ties into what was happening in that game and what was happening in the story. It just, you know, for some reason that connection makes that, you know, makes the soundtrack work for me. And when I was playing Final Fantasy 14 every single time, they did a whole like raid series that was basically like a crossover from Nier Automata. I loved every second of it. Oh my God. The music that they did, like, you know, getting the composers for Nier Automata and the composer for Final Fantasy 14 to basically marry and have a fucking like musical love child. It was great. It was super awesome. So I don't know. That alone, that, you know, that right there, I'm putting it in my cart right now. I mean, I don't give a shit.
Yeah,
that's, you know, what it costs. Yeah. Did you get the complete edition?
Whatever the normal edition was.
Because I'm looking at all of the DLC content, and it shows that you already own this. So Steam has outed you. You bought the complete edition.
Yeah, Green Man didn't make me pay very much for it.
So I'm going to check out Green Man Gaming right now and see what they've got for editions.
So more so than that, let's see. Other games that I've played.
Are you old enough to play this game?
Yeah, you are. Other things that I've played, though, I did play some Death Stranding 2. Really, really sad that this isn't on PC yet. It is only on PS5. I originally ordered it from Amazon a couple weeks ago, and it kept saying that the shipping date was going to be August 11th, which was way too far out. And then I chatted with them on Thursday and was like, hey, this game comes out, you know, today, basically. You guys still show a shipping date? And then somebody got back to me that said, ship it out in 24 hours. Well, the morning of Friday, it was still showing that. And so I canceled it. And then I ordered Death Stranding 2 as part of my grocery pickup on Friday afternoon while I was sick. So it just came out with my groceries, which was kind of nice. And I didn't really, I was really sick yesterday. So I updated my PS5 because I haven't played it in like 9 months. And then I found out why I have two controllers. One of my controllers definitely has some stick drift, so I spent a lot of time last night trying to, like, go through the fogginess of being really sick and trying to fix a controller and saying, fuck it, and seeing if my old controller worked. And then I realized my old controller was the controller that was in my hand, so I just flipped it around to the new controller I'd bought, which has no issues. And then, like, I was in a real haze. Like, I went to bed at 8 o'clock yesterday. And then woke up at like 5 this morning, and then I wasn't feeling great, but I was like, you know what? I'm going to play some Death Stranding. So I played Death Stranding all the way up until we were talking about podcasting earlier today.
Damn.
So I'm about 4 hours in. I'm in episode 2. I've just got my first, you know, motorcycle of sorts. I'm going to talk more about this as I go. I literally just finished Death Stranding 1 for real reels, I think last week. Sunday, I think. I think I posted an R thread.
Mm-hmm.
After we had finished the podcast, or right before it. It was a good game. Yeah, I think I even reviewed it on the last podcast. It was a really good game. In preparation of doing this service to this game. So I went ahead and got the full edition. Or not full edition. I went ahead and got it installed and started playing this new one. And immediately noticed some pretty jarring differences. Well, so A, in quality mode, this thing runs at 30 FPS on a PS5. Mm. No bueno. So I changed it to performance mode and it runs at 60 plus FPS. There's not a noticeable difference except for water that I can tell. And I'm okay with that because seeing this at a, like, when you're used to playing everything at 60 to 120 plus FPS, you go to 30, it feels like the game's broken. Like, it just, yeah, first world problems, right?
Right.
But I was just like, oh, no bueno. So playing it in performance mode is fine. It's a good looking game. It's a better looking game, even in performance mode, than the previous game. Things that, like, that just kind of caught me off guard is the it's a much sadder story than the first one, if you can even imagine that. It's a way more personal Sam story.
Okay.
Something else that really caught me differently is, so this is in Mexico, at least that's where I'm at right now. I don't know if it's going to change, but it's a desert environment, and when there's time fall, it rains, right? Mm-hmm. Well, in the desert, when there rains, there's a flash flood. There are flash floods in this game. There are gullies and riverbeds that are dry as a bone, and then timefall happens, and it rapidly expands. I have not gotten completely screwed by it yet, but I can see it screwing me pretty soon. So all the existing bodies of water get fuller, and then things that didn't have water in them at all become fuller in a raging river. And you can also connect two ladders together to create kind of like a makeshift bridge, which is kind of neat. Something they needed to do for a long time. And you can, I don't know if you could do this before, but you can totally take your backpack off and bind it with your rope or your strand, as they like to call it. These all these silly terms in Death Stranding. Mm-hmm. And then things don't topple off if people fight you. I also noticed that you could drop your backpack in a timefall shelter while you went and fought BTs. So there was an area that I needed to go clear out a bunch of BTs, and it said, you know, hold down triangle and you can leave your backpack here while you go fight BTs, essentially. It's like, that's not a bad idea. I don't have to worry about timefall, and I've got a little grenade pouch, so let's take this grenade pouch and go fight some BTs, and I'll leave my bag here to continue to get not have any kind of damage from the timefall.
That was something that needed to happen, yeah.
So, like, the timefall... backpack off. Nice. Yeah, and the timefall shelters are definitely better than they used to be. You can also... they'll repel big BTs, too. So, and this is just me looking through the notes, essentially, right? But it was saying, essentially, if you are being chased by a BT, you can essentially have that as a safe spot from a BT if you need it to be. Which I thought was pretty neat. Seems a little bit more combat focused than the last one, which actually isn't a bad thing. Drop kicks are really fun.
Oh yeah, I imagine so.
Got really good at pairing with the strand pretty early on and just working with that rope. And then there's like a new shotgun too, so you can charge up this little pistol and essentially stun dart guys silently with this stun pistol. So I'm not typically the kind of guy that goes on a ramp. No, I take that back. When I figure out how to build roads, if that's a thing in this game, which I'm sure it is, I will go on a spree to raid these bandit bases and gather materials, and I will probably take a couple of guns and that shock pistol with me. But I really do hope they have the Bulla gun. I really like the Bulla gun.
The Bulla gun was really nice, yeah.
Because it was just, you know, even if you didn't hit him dead on, like, you at least knocked him down so you can go over there and kick him in the face.
Right.
But, like, overall, yeah, is it more of the same? Yeah, with a lot of improvements. I'll know more as I've played more. But it seems like a pretty solid-ass game. And I like Death Stranding. I know there's a lot of people, if you go to social media, walking simulator. Yeah, just
that's another,
literally just play this game. That's what I thought it was, and I held off on like one of the best games I've played in like 10 years because right. I thought it was a walking simulator.
It's another one of those games that was unfairly categorized, right? it's just like, yeah, everybody said, oh, it's a walking simulator, but it actually has more of a story than you would expect, and it does do a really good job of like transforming certain areas. You know, so you can go into, when you first get into an area, it's just like it's pretty desolate. There's no roads, there's no creature comforts, there's no way to, you know, you have to hoof it from point A to point B, but as you go along, you're like, get bikes, get trucks, you build roads, you do zip lines, you end up, you know, basically making your life easier as you go along through effort, and it, you know, has a pretty good way of interacting with, you know, with other players without like directly interacting with other players, right? So, you know, it's fairly neat, and I look forward to, you know, playing Death Stranding you know, too. It's just a, I gotta wrestle the TV away from my roommate to be able to do that.
If you want to play something else that's esoteric and weird and has a great story, The Altars is really good.
Yeah, you had said something about that. I've got it downloaded. I unfortunately didn't have time to actually play.
You can play it in bite-sized pieces. That's another thing I'll say.
Okay. Well, it's a thing. Like, I may not have, you know, like, I don't have the problem Jason has with, like, I've got to do things with the kids and, you know, I've got a wife that basically wants my attention, yada, yada, yada. But, you know, recently it's been like, I haven't really felt like I had any time. Like, honestly, and it might be just like the fact that I haven't been sleeping right. And, you know, 2 weeks straight worth of, you know, worth doing basically high stress shit for work is finally getting to me. But, it's, you know, it's a thing, like, I need to sit down and have time. Like, well, for sitting down, go figure. This is one of the things that I'm having troubles with now, is literally sitting down and spending time in, you know, in my gaming chair, basically, my rig. And it's physical. I have physical pain sitting here at my, you know, at my computer chair. This is wrong. What's happened is I have lost my ass, and my ass is the only thing that was keeping my tailbone from contacting, like, the surface. And sitting here on my non-existent ass anymore is starting to, it hurts. How do skinny people do it? I don't understand. I've never had this problem. I've always had an ass. Now I don't have an ass.
You just need these cushions that I have.
I'm assless. I'm an assless gamer, and I guess I need to buy a donut. I don't know. I had at one point one of those purple, like, you know, the purple bed, you know, things you put on your bed, and it's like, it's a cushion, you know, do the whole egg thing, right?
Yeah.
I bought a purple seat cushion. It's about an inch and a half thick. It's a thick boy, right? But it's what I'm sitting on right now just to be able to podcast, because if I didn't, I would have massive tailbone issues. So that, you know, that was a thing that's, you know, within the last week or so that I've changed, and it's made being able to sit down and play The Division a little bit more enjoyable. I might actually spend more time sitting at my computer now because it doesn't physically hurt. But yeah, these are all things that's like, since I lost, you know, started losing a bunch of weight. And since it's, you know, summertime and basically everybody expects you to be outside of the house, you know, especially up north during the weekends on the, you know, in summer, and work and a bunch of other shit, it's just like a culmination of a bunch of shit that's like, you are not supposed to be here, or we're going to make it super uncomfortable for you to like sit down and enjoy the, you know, the hobbies that you like to do. So that's one of the reasons why I haven't actually, it's like, that's my biggest excuse for not having, spent a lot of time gaming. And it's because the summer up north is one of those things that you have to enjoy while you have it. It's not necessarily like, so it's definitely different in the South. Summer happens in the South. You can't go outside because it's 150 fucking degrees outside. You're going to cook yourself, right? Up north, it is 77 degrees, right? It is sunny, 77 degrees with a light breeze going. And if it's not raining, you want to be outside, or you want to be, you know, in a pool or at, you know, at the beach or doing something outside. Because winter sucks. And winter really sucks up here. So you have to soak up as much of the sun as you possibly can while it's sunny. Because because the other half of the year is really shitty. So I get a lot more time playing video games in the wintertime because there really isn't anything to do outside. That's the short version. Summertime has always been like, I have, I'll get the summer sale. I'll play a couple, couple games here and there. And then, and generally there isn't a whole lot of releases that's in the summer. It's a little different this year because there's some actually really good releases right at the beginning of summer, which is odd. But, I tend to spend more time away from my computer, especially now, considering that I'm basically half the man I used to be. That's my story. I'm sticking to it. It's things. I've got a lot of shit that I really want to play. Like Stellar Blade's now like top of my fucking radar.
You should try it out. And I've had a lot of fun with it.
I'm gonna get it. And I'm gonna play it. Death Stranding 2 also kind of want to play that game, but I have to wrestle my roommate for control of the TV because the TV is basically used to watch nothing but NCIS reruns. He's going through all of the different NCIS.
Run another HDMI cable to your PC.
Well, I'm thinking about moving my PlayStation here and just took it up to my ultra-wide monitor. I don't know if it'll actually work on my ultra-wide monitor. I don't know. Now that I'm not building a house, I could probably afford a fucking, TV and just do that. it's a thing. He needs to play video games on his PC so that I can use the TV. And if he was in here right now, he'd be like, well, all you got to do is ask. I'm not that guy.
Well, do we want to take a quick break?
Yeah, let's take a break.
All right, we'll be back. And we're back. Right.
Sorry, I'm super excited.
Yeah.
Making noise in the background, Matt. Bear with me here.
So, you had mentioned that there were Steam sales going on right now.
Yes.
What do you think the Borderlands 3 price is right now?
Borderlands 3, I know, is pretty stupid. It's pretty dumb cheap right now. I think it's like, a couple bucks?
$3.
$3. Yeah. See, at one point, I thought I saw it at $2, like $1.99 or some bullshit. I can't remember. Is it 95% off or some shit?
Yeah.
Ah. Okay. Well,
and it came out 6 years ago. To be fair, right?
Right.
What do you want? So Randy Pitchford likes to stick his foot in his mouth all the time.
He does.
What he said is, he said, sales like this, Borderlands 3 showing up on his console subscription programs, took over 5 years for the game's launch to happen. Take advantage of that while it's here, and to set expectation will be even longer before this kind of thing happens in the next cycle with Borderlands 4. Specifically, before it goes on sale.
I will tell you right now, this guy does not know marketing whatsoever.
He doesn't know his audience. He doesn't know the climate right now.
So, well, I mean, I'm sure he does, but
yeah, he does, because it was initially, he was acting like it might be $80, and then it moved down to $70.
Mm-hmm.
And then
because he's getting He's getting his shit thrown back in his face, honestly.
Yeah, but he, Mike O'Punk had said that they were going to release on the same day as Borderlands 4 at $20. Because their pitch was you can get 4 Mike O'Punk games for the price of 1 Borderlands, and it's a similar style game. So right now, Randy Pitchford is not earning any goodwill with me.
Oh, no. Or anybody in the gaming community, to be honest.
Honestly, unless there's nothing else going on, I'm just going to let it. I'm going to let it cook. I'm going to let him cook, to be honest with you.
So.
That's how I feel. Michael Punk, that's what I'm doing.
I mean, I get it. So this guy is basically, he doesn't know when to stop talking. And honestly, it would have been better if he had not said any of those two things. Like if it hadn't been, if he hadn't just, he would have gotten a lot of shit, or the company itself would have gotten a lot of shit for an $80 price, on Borderlands 4.
But he tied himself to it.
But he tied himself to it, right? And basically doubled down on it. And had to walk it back because there was a lot of backlash. Again, when you're looking at at this, he's put his foot in his mouth again, just as you said, by basically saying, well, you better take advantage of any deals now, because you're basically not going to get any deals on Borderlands 4 going forward.
Well, here's the thing: I don't think it'll sell well because he's been such a bitch. And I think what'll happen is by winter we're going to see this at like $50. That's my prediction. And Christmas sale is when I'll get this at $50.
And you know what? And that's fine. That's basically what a lot of the a lot of shit is happening online right now. About the pricing, structure of video games. Jeez, I'm all of a sudden have like weird hiccups. Bear with me. There's movements right now to not necessarily like lock in gaming prices, because it's based off of what each individual like developer or publishing studio thinks what they're what people will buy, and it's really been kind of so game prices started off, if you look at game prices from like the 90s, they were really high based on inflation, right? And then they got cheaper over time, and digital releases allowed it to get to its all-time low, and now it's coming back up again.
Yeah, but the biggest difference between the 90s and now is the cost of living is like 4 times what it used to be. And so for consumer products, for entertainment products, we are looking for cheaper prices because we don't have that extra income anymore.
Right. And I think that what is ultimately what's going to happen is what we have talked about on the show plenty of times before, is people will go more indie, where the games are $20 to $30. And they get to see a whole new side of gaming, like game development in the $20 to $30 range. Yeah, you're probably not going to get like the flashiest graphics. You're not going to be able to like, reach out and slap a fucking like virtual ass that looks like it's right in front of you, but you'll see different art styles. You see different rendering styles. You see different gameplay styles. You get to see different concepts that ultimately have, started, some of the gameplay concepts that we see nowadays, in AAA titles and shit that's really fucking, expansive. Like, that shit started indie. Those ideas started indie. Roguelikes started indie. And the whole idea was roguelike comes from the word rogue, and that was an indie title. Like, it was developed small, you know? But it's now so it's so ubiquitous that it's now, you know, you've got games like Returnal that look great, AAA roguelike, you know, things like that. It all comes from, you know, the experimentation in the indie space. And indie space really has been priced in, you know, in an experimental way, you know, $10, $20, $30. I've seen a couple, like, you know, I've seen some $40, indie titles, but those are from, indie studios that have put out a couple more games than just like their initial title, and they've had some success, right? So they're getting into like the B tier of gaming, they're a B tier studio instead of an indie studio, or they've got a publisher now instead of self-publishing, or something has happened, you know, where they're starting to make it, you know, and that's great. I love seeing that. What you're looking at the, you know, EA or Ubisoft or the big, you know, big publishing companies right now that are just, you know, gobbling up all these little fucking studios and just like making them make games and then throwing a fucking huge price tag on it is like, they're just looking for money. They're looking, you know, looking for the almighty dollar. And, well, gamers will vote with their wallet. Just like you said, you're not going to pick up the game right away. That's perfectly fine. I agree. You know, it's stupid. That is a dumb price. Nobody should be paying $80 for a game. Nobody really should be paying $70 for a game. And getting it on a sale, great. Him basically, you know, Pitchford coming out and saying, well, it's most definitely not going to go on sale anytime soon, is basically, you know, just talking directly to people like us that do wait for sales sometimes. We don't have to play the latest game the day it releases. And well, it really does make me want to kick him in the nuts.
Yeah.
You know, it really does, you know, piss me off that he's saying shit, you know, directly to the gaming crowd that does wait for a good sale. And that's mainly PC gamers. I mean, let's be honest.
Borderlands isn't really on in my good graces to begin with, because it hasn't been gutted in 10 years. So,
I mean, you're not wrong.
Borderlands 2 is the last good Borderlands.
And you're not wrong. I mean, the Borderlands games really has kind of, you know, taken a shit dive and stuff like that. And I'm not saying that I'm going to pick it up day one. I'm not going to, you know, I'm most definitely one of those people, especially with the Borderlands series. Picked up Borderlands 3 day one, played it, and I was disappointed, just like a lot of other people, with, you know, with how that game played out. Mechanically, not bad, but story-wise and just, you know, total gameplay-wise, it still sucked. At least for me. I didn't like it. I was one of those games that I played, beat it, saw a little bit of what their end game was, and I was like, yeah, I'm good. You know, so move on to something completely different. You know, Borderlands 4 is going to come out, what is it, next month? Is it?
Yeah, it's next month.
Okay, so that game is coming out next month. I am most definitely going to allow the people who can get those copies for free, you know, those reviewers that are out there that can get those review copies or the pre-release copies and, you know, be able to do the initial media push for it. I am most definitely going to let them take the brunt of Borderlands 4 and, you know, analyze the reviews. And honestly, anybody that's listening here that's trying to make their dollars work for them, don't buy shit ahead of time. Don't pre-order unless you know you're going to play that game. Like, without a doubt, doesn't matter how good or bad it is, you know, don't pre-order the fucking games until you know for sure that you're going to like it. And that's just the way that, you know, that's just the smart way of doing shit. I mean, you want to make your entertainment dollars last. The last thing you want to do is tie up $70 of, you know, of your entertainment dollar on, say, Borderlands 4. You know, when you can go and get a, you know, again, not sponsored, but you can get a Green Man Gaming Green Man Gaming deal on, you know, something like Stellar Blade or something else that's been out for, you know, a month or so, that's been proven and people are talking about it as like, this is a really good game to play. You should probably, you know, spend some time playing it. It's not, there is a myth that you're gonna miss out. There is no FOMO when it comes to video games.
No, there's a little bit of FOMO with what we do, but I think we manage. There's the release schedule so aggressive right now. Like, I can have a little bit of FOMO.
There is the only FOMO that we have, like specifically you and I have, or, you know, anybody that does a podcast is, you know, specifically just getting the information out there for people who are on the fence about making a, you know, a gaming purchase decision.
That's right? Why I got Stellar Blade.
Right. And that's the thing. But, you know, from a gamer standpoint, like, if I'm listening to this show and I am looking at possibly picking up a game or two, and I just want to get an idea, hey, is Stellar Blade worth my dollars? I'm going to listen to somebody that's actually played Stellar Blade and ask, you know, and basically gather from the information they provide whether or not it's worth my dollars. Same thing should happen with Borderlands 4, honestly.
Yeah.
And any other game that comes out.
I will actually watch somebody play that because it's going to be $80 or $70. And I'm not really sold on Borderlands right now, again. So, that being said, though, I do want to move to another point.
Sure.
You know how there's a lot of spam on Steam, essentially?
Oh, you mean like
bullshit games?
The times where I go through the discovery queue and end up with, like, you know, don't shit on my house, or
don't poop in my soup.
I mean, what's that?
Don't poop in my soup,
or don't poop in my soup, or yeah, some random ass fucking. I mean, all right, so don't shit on my house is a legit game, and it is basically like a Vampire Survivors, but you're trying to protect your house from pigeons. And it's funny. I own it. And I bought it because it was a joke. And I actually, you know, I have like maybe 10 hours into like this $5 game. It's worth it. Sometimes there's a gem in the rough, but there's a lot of rough out there, right? So,
to tie that back in, do you know what itch.io is?
I have kind of heard of it. Yeah, that's
it's a place where indie developers sell their games. Yeah. So there is a developer, or there is a individual that goes by me or myself that is republishing games from itch.io to Steam. And finally, some of these developers have caught on that that's what's going on, and they are pulling the games down.
Oh, shit. So this guy is basically
stealing those games.
Stealing games from itch.io and selling them for himself.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
So if the publisher or developer says me or myself, I would report it. But stuff that came from like itch.io, which I'm actually working through, I'm going to work through a little bit more, is Repo's one of those, right? Which I actually sold quite a few, over a million copies, honestly.
Oh, yeah. Repo is, yeah.
And then what's the damn drug game?
Schedule 1?
Schedule 1. I think that might have come from itch.io. But anyways, like games like that have come from itch.io, and those publishers have decided to start selling their stuff on Steam. And honestly, like people like Splattercat routinely, because he's a pretty big YouTuber, will get copies from people on itch.io. So if you're looking for something on there or looking for games that the really the really obscure stuff, like, that's the guy to watch. Like, he goes through 10 or 15 before he finds the one. And pretty entertaining, honestly. But, yeah. So just be on the lookout for that. So I think that's pretty fucking shitty.
And we definitely don't need any more of that spam shit on Steam. Holy fuck, there's a lot.
Yeah, there's also
of shit games.
Yeah, if you think Steam's bad, apparently Nintendo and the PS store have been hit by a wave of AI games of people generating trash content to sell on those storefronts, because there's no vetting on the little to no vetting on the Nintendo store or the PlayStation store, surprisingly.
That's nuts.
We were talking a lot of hardware earlier. Did you hear that there is a budget NVIDIA GPU coming out next month in July?
I have actually heard about this. This is what the 50-50?
It's 50-50.
Oh, my God.
It's coming out at $249.
$249?
Yeah. That's actually not a bad price. No, that's not a bad price.
Okay. I got to look at the specs here.
I can go through the specs, but I'll go through the specs that most people know anything about. So things that it has, it's going to have 8 gigs of GDDR6 and a base clock of 2.31 gigahertz with a boost clock of 2.57 gigahertz. Required PSU is a 550 watt power supply. If you've already got like a 3080 or 3090, I would not upgrade to this. But if you're still rocking a 1080, right, 1080 Ti or something like that, then this might be a good upgrade path.
That's exactly what I was going to look up, do a comparison between the 1080 Ti, just basically like 2017's like fucking golden child, right? That game, you know, that card has done a lot of work.
Yeah, it had a 1070 forever.
Right. And then the 50-50, you know, basically being like a
if you're not an idiot like me and Rusty, they have to upgrade something big every couple of 3 years. This is perfect.
True. True.
I was watching Jay's Two Cents play Helldivers 2 on a 1060 at 1080p. He made a budget build for $550 and played Helldivers 2 at 60 FPS at 1080p on a 1060. This will play most of your games.
I was talking to my coworker, so I have actually heard about this particular card just before, like yesterday, and he was primarily a WoW player, right? He hasn't upgraded his rig in, I want to say, like 10 years.
Oof.
You know, yeah, it
probably running at 1070.
He's running a 1070, 1080, I think, something like that. But it's like, you know, 1080p gaming is all I need. I'm playing, you know, WoW. And sure, on some of the raids, it kind of chugs, but I turn down some of the, you know, some of the graphic settings. I can do what I, you know, need to do. That game isn't necessarily going to, like, press a video card, right? It's been out forever. They've optimized it so that you can run it on a potato. That said, he realized he was having problems at 1080p gaming when he tried to play Doom: The Dark Ages, and his machine was just chugging hard. Like, even 1080p gaming, Doom: The Dark Ages did not want to play very well on his rig.
He probably doesn't even have the option of like DLSS or anything either, because it's a newer card.
Right. So now he realized that it's time to upgrade his graphics card, but he doesn't want to do anything stupid. And honestly, video card prices are stupid right now. Just like housing prices, right?
$249 is not bad, though.
Huh?
$249 is not bad, though.
Yeah, so he saw the 50-50 announcement, and he's like, $250 and I primarily play WoW, this is going to be better than the card I currently have. It had 8 gigs in the 1080, right? I think.
Jesus Christ. I just wanted to look up 5090s just to be sure. Yeah. 2549. Fuck you.
Oh, no. It has 11 gigs. 1080 Ti had 11 gigs, whereas the...
Yeah, but it's like DDR3 or something.
Right. But yeah, so it is much faster. So this is GDDR6 on the 5050 versus GDDR5X. So it's sort of comparable. Its memory bandwidth is actually less because GDDR5X is better than GDDR6 as far as memory bandwidth is concerned. But the memory clock speed on GDDR6 is faster. So there's a lot of balancing going on right here.
Prices are still crazy on graphics cards. I was just curious, right? You're talking about graphics cards. Get a 5090 for $2,500. My exact card I can get on Newegg for $4,099.
Jesus.
Does it have a Gigabyte Aero 4090? The white one.
Yeah, so... And I got messages all, you know... Last week and this week, especially like, of course, right when I'm, you know, looking at buying a house, I get messages from B&H Photo because I had alerts set up for when the 5090s were going to be available. And I'd gotten a couple alerts of the 5090s being in stock. And they're like, yeah, just $3,000. You know,
well, you can get it for $25.99. Open box.
No, thank you. No open box.
At $2,000.
If I'm buying something, if I'm buying a PC component that is about twice as much as what my previous two builds have cost in total, I'm buying that fucker new.
Yeah.
So.
Open box. That's crazy. $2,500. Yeah. I think the MSRP was about $2,500 regardless, though. But they're still going for crazy prices. So if you can wrangle this, I think if you were already on a lower tier build, right, like you're at like a 3060 or something like that, or maybe a 4060, that's not a bad upgrade. I would say like 10 series card, to be honest with you. If you had a 10 series card, I think this is where you upgrade.
Right, and I think that is what they're targeting. Like, we were looking at a video card for the podcast PC, and I was looking at, you know, at something that would be able to do the basics, right? I didn't necessarily
want a Radeon.
We ended up going with a Radeon, but that was what, $150?
No, $120, I think.
$120. It was. You know, decently cheap, right? The next step up is somebody that, you know, plays games casually, wants to do a little bit more than, you know, just like display something on the TV or on the monitor.
Jason really wanted me to get an Intel Arc. He's like, I don't know how long that's going to be supported for.
I'm not going to. No, don't get an Arc.
I know Radeon to be supported for fucking ever.
Right. Well, I don't even trust the art. I don't use them. But still, the 5050 I think would be probably provided that they've got a decent stock of the cards, right? I think that they will sell like hotcakes for budget builds. And I know that. I know in my heart of hearts that the 5050 is basically just like the chip rejects from all of the others, right? These are the cores, you know, the processor cores that just didn't make the cut for, like, you know, the, you know, 5060, 5070s, you know, stuff like that. These are like the lowest bend. But you get what you pay for. And if what you want is just, you know, you want something that will take care of or replace a 10 plus year old video card, like my, you know, like my coworker, and he wants just a little bit of a better boost and some of the more modern features, you really can't go wrong with this. Because yeah, the alternative is spend what, $300 more for the next tier up, and not everybody's got the money for that shit, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm on the fence. I mean, a lot of tech YouTubers that, you know, that I've noticed, you know, talked about, or I've watched, have talked about the 5050 release, and this, and they were saying, by and large, if you've got modern cards, this is a waste of silicon. This is a waste of sand. But if you are just getting into the market and you have just bare bones requirements for your for video needs, this will do. And it doesn't break the bank. It allows you to build a PC for your grandma or your parents that don't game for less than $1,000 now. And that is something that we desperately needed for, you know, for a, you know, in the graphics card spaces. We actually needed something, you know, from NVIDIA. And I mean, we found some older cards from Radeon, but we needed something that was modern, that was, you know, inexpensive, that still would be able to do the job. This is it, you know, and it's not for everybody. It's definitely not for me. I wouldn't be able to game on this. Fuck that. But
everybody's got a different place. Everybody's got a different budget. Me.
Yeah.
We first started this, I was definitely on budgets. Just not anymore. Not in the same way I was before.
Right. Well, this
and I'm also not stupid either, as in, why would I spend $2,500 on a 5090?
Right. Or $3,000, you know, in my case, like, holy crap. So that's there, and it's an interesting, it's got its interesting little niche, but, you know, I don't know. It's not the most powerful gaming card. In fact, it's the least powerful gaming card available in the current series, but hey, it's going to have its, it's going to have people that buy it, but yeah. It wouldn't be able to do a whole lot, but looking at different shit in the gaming news space, I've heard a lot about a game that I initially was kind of interested in, but not necessarily like, I'm not going to jump into it. Cause you know, I really did like my survival games. Playing Ark was actually really fun, right? Spent a lot of time fucking playing around with Ark Survival Evolved, and haven't played Ascended, but it's just basically evolved with a new coat of paint. It did come, you know, there was Dune Awakening that came out just, you know, not too long ago, right? And I've been seeing people play that game online, and it seems interesting, right? There's some interesting gameplay, but it's there was one thing that I didn't like about it, and it basically is like, if you get to the point where you want to get into endgame or be able to have shit in that game, it forced you into PvP.
Oh, yeah, and I think I heard about this.
Yeah, there's an area in Dune Awakening on Arrakis that's called the Deep Desert. And in the deep desert, that's basically where you get your, you know, you get the resources that is very scarce in most of the other portions of the map. So you get your spice and you get your water, and all that stuff is a more plentiful, or, and because it's more plentiful out there, they made that whole area PvP. So there's risk versus reward, kind of like the Dark Zone and, you know, Division 2 and a bunch of other fucking games, right?
Yeah, but it forced
you into a PvP area. there's been some considerable feedback from the player base about the forced PvP at endgame for Dune Awakening, to the point where it's like, yeah, the game's selling like hotcakes, but people who get to the end game of that, there's basically nothing outside of, trying to, gather additional shit in the PvP zone. And people who play games like me and want to play the experience, I don't necessarily want to be, forced into PvP. And then, in fact, that was one of the reasons why I didn't play Dark Souls for a long ass time, because I felt like I was forced into PvP in that game. I initially got over it, but and it wasn't necessarily forced. It was just like, okay, this guy's going to come in. I'm going to find a nice spot to go die, so that this guy goes away, and then I continue on with my gameplay. Fuck him, right? But Dune Awakening, you don't have that choice in the end game. Now, because of the feedback that people have been throwing at Funcom is going to take a section of the Deep Desert and make it PvE. And it sounds more like what they're going to do is they're going to basically have, like, you're going to have your normal play area, the Deep Desert that's PvE, and the Deep Desert that's PvP. And obviously, there's probably going to be better shit in the PvP zone than the PvE zone, but at least you'll be able to go to the Deep Desert in PvE and be able to experience a touch of that end game, right?
Right.
And be able to progress a little bit further. And I think that's all right. I mean, the same shit happened in The Division and a lot of other games. I'm only going to talk about The Division because I'm playing it right now, right? So it's fresh in my mind. But there was only, there was shit that you could only get from the Dark Zone in The Division 2.
I remember that.
And you had to go through PvP, or had to, had to go in and do the whole, like, extraction shooter PvP experience from the Dark Zone to be able to have a chance at it. And they've gone away from that a bit more. It's still there, but some of the PvP only shit cycles in to PvE, and you're able to, over time, be able to get some of the stuff. You get it faster if you go through PvP, but, alas, you can still have access to it, right? And I see them doing something similar with Dune Awakening, is if there's something that's going to be, like, exclusive to the PvP zone, they'll have some of that available in the PvE zone, but it'll be much faster to get that. Like, there'll be more spikes or whatever in PvP than there will be in the PvE zones. And that struggle, some people play for that, some people don't. But,
no,
I mean, I don't need that kind of stress when I'm playing games, and that's the thing for me. But I mean, like I was saying before, Dune Awakening is selling like hotcakes, and there is there's quite a bit of people actually jumping into that game. The story that I'm looking at here says that it's Funcom's fastest selling game.
There's been two pretty successful Dune movies in the last, like, 6 or so years.
Yeah, true. There was, and it's really running off of, the success of those movies. Like, I couldn't see this being
10 years ago. Nobody gave a shit. There would have been people give a shit, but not like this.
Right. I don't see this being as successful if those two movies were flops, but those were actually pretty decent movies. So, I mean, I will probably eventually play it, but one of the reasons why I didn't jump into, to Dune Awakening, outside of the fact that I don't have time for a lot of that shit anymore, is simply because I knew that there were, you know, that the end game was tied to PvP. And I said, that shit, I don't get it. I don't need that in my life right now. So.
Well, do we have anything else?
There was one other thing that I saw. There was, you remember in Stalker 2, when the first, you know, when we both played that game right when it first came out, you know, blemishes aside, we both loved it, right? You know, it had its, you know, it has its blemishes for sure, right? But it was very satisfying to play. One of the things that we both were kind of disappointed with, and a lot of people were, was, you know, the whole A-life thing. The enemy AI, you know, in that game didn't feel real. It felt like it was just like, it was spawned in just outside of your field of view, and you had random encounters with, you know, bullshit. You know, and the whole idea behind Stalker was that the, you know, that the groups of people that you met, the NPCs that you met as, you know, as you go along, have their own little story that they follow. And, you know, you could probably run into the same NPCs moving from point A to point B as you move through the, you know, the game world.
Yeah, but it's been, I know they were working on it. Did they finally get that right?
So A-Life, you know, the A-Life features have been added to the latest patch, patch 1.5. So it makes it feel a bit better. And there's some other shit that they've added to that update. There's a whole, you know, a whole list of shit in the patch notes.
Hopefully no random crashing.
I hope they fix some of that random crashing, or the fact that you could just teleport into, like, Oblivion, because yeah, I've done that before.
I think it might be, I don't know that it's too little too late, but, like, I've already beat that game months ago.
So, I get it, and it really is kind of too little too late in a lot of ways, because that was, you know, that was one of the features that I was kind of looking forward to.
I think despite that feature not being there, like, I still gave that a pretty high rating. Like, yeah, I really liked that game.
The game was really great. One of the things that that I'm thinking about doing, though, is, you know, and I did this for a couple other games, too. Is I played through the game initially, and then I wait a while, allow them to, you know, fix their shit, right? And then play through a game again. And I attempted to do this with Cyberpunk because I played through that game initially, even though it was, you know, there was a lot of hot garbage that was going on with that game. We kind of, you know, we still had rigs that would power through it. I do definitely remember my Cyberpunk experience where my dick was hanging out while T-posing on the top of a fucking motorcycle. Shit happens, right? But, you know, I haven't been able to, you know, to sit down and actually play Cyberpunk after all of the changes that's, you know, that's been made. But basically, Cyberpunk's a completely different game now. You know, the whole, you know, the story itself is there, but the progression is different. You know, so it's something that I need to re-experience. I think the same thing can be said for Stalker 2. Because there that world, I know I didn't explore everything. And there came a point where I was like, okay, I just need to, I need to take the most efficient route instead of the exploration route, to, you know, just so that I can finish this game. Because it's, you're hoofing it for, you know, from point A to point B.
Yeah, there's no vehicles.
There's no vehicles.
There's fast travel eventually, but the getting to a new place requires hoofing it. Getting to a place that you're going to explore requires hoofing it, and it's pretty big.
Right. I know that there was a lot of shit that I didn't see and I didn't do in that game. And I about halfway through, I think I intentionally decided not to explore every nook and cranny because that would make going back to the game a little bit more fun for me. So I will go, I will eventually go back to playing this game. And hearing that they finally figured out Alife and got some, you know, at least some of it working from what I can tell, that's big thumbs up for me. Because that itself is going to make that game feel different. You know, I know that the, you know, the random enemy spawn, that was some bullshit.
Yeah, that was
a lot of times it was some bullshit. I would just roll my eyes when it happened. And that's not, you know, and that's not what Stalker felt like, or it, you know, initially. So, but that's all I've got. That is the thing that I'm, things that's, you know, that is on the news right now.
Well,
can't ask Jason, and I don't have this memorized.
I do.
Okay.
So you can find us at tiltcast.com, find us on YouTube at The Real Tiltcast, find us on Twitter, search Tiltcast, and Facebook, which is where we primarily post everything. You can also find us on Spotify and iTunes, search The Tiltcast. Also, friends of the show, we've got Picking Up the Pixels or Pupcast with our friend John Musum. He's my real-life friend. See, almost weekly. And our friends with TBGP, they do fantastic things. And I can't believe Boston is doing this like 15 years later.
Yes.
And with that, it is the end of the show.
You can probably say the same about us.
Yeah.
All right.
Peace.